Likewise, the imposing phonic sounds of the sound of shoegaze.
The fact that we are here and that I speak these words is an attempt to break
that silence and bridge some of those
differences between us, for it's not the difference which immobilizes us, but silence. And there are so many silences to be broken.
And there are so many silences to be broken.
And there are so many silences to be broken. Audre Lorde.
Those lines you just heard are from Audre Lorde's seminal text, Your Silence Will Not Protect You. To traverse our differences, are there silences that we must first break?
In crafting sonic spaces, it's been about crafting a kind of a humanity, saying that you exist, you are there.
You can just like push change as an individual, like on a very just like micro level, but like without that little bit, the big thing won't change either.
Trying to feel like some sort of energy from pushing my accent forward and for pushing regionality forward.
We're not gonna really start dismantling the deep inequalities of our society just thinking in these thin terms. So it is about voicing these unarticulated things.
A sonic space is inevitably a political space.
For the 2019 edition of Wising Polyphonic, an annual music festival at Wising Arts Centre in Cambridgeshire, Somerset House Studios were invited to guest curate the programme. The idea driving it was that of connection, moving beyond Wising's site as a place where artists meet and experiment, to consider connection beyond the physical. Connection as a channel of communication, an incantation, returning or heralding. The calling on another or unknown to understand different worlds and possibilities.
Hi, my name's Annie Go. So we're here at Wising Arts Centre. The reason that the sonic cyberfeminism thing came about was because there hadn't really been a really big debate around sound and music to do with cyberfeminism. So that was kind of the initial idea. The sonic cyberfeminism thing came about was because it was about trying to create a bit of a more of a debate, more of a critical space around these issues. So if you think about the issue of the representation of women in electronic music, that's also kind of quite a thin category. So you could be like, oh, what does women mean? Woman might mean a different thing to different people. You might feel excluded if you're a trans woman, or if you're a disabled woman, or if you're a woman of colour. You might not feel like they are talking about you when they're saying we need more women in there. So it was about, you know, creating a space where we could have those kind of discussions, which are often a lot more complex than a simple like, oh, we just need 50-50 representation. So that's kind of how the project began.
I am Natalie Hyacinth. You know, coming from a working class background in particular, I think is so important because we must not always forget that we are under an oppressive system of capitalism as a black individual, as a woman, as a working class person. It was like, you just need to just not say anything. You need to be silent. So that was kind of my feeling growing up. That was actually my existence. It was to be silent, to not talk, to not express yourself. And so I think it's really important that we, as sonic cyberfeminisms, as a collective, we are just making some sound. Obviously, there's a lot of noise out there. There is a lot of oppressive silence. But just the fact that we exist and are talking is just testament we can overcome oppression. It's a bit like Fred Moulton in his book, Black Music, I think it was, is testament to the fact that objects can resist. It's really important just to talk, just to create, just to make your place in the world, because the system is set up so that you are crushed. You know, Fanon talked about this crushing objected. You know, that's what the system of capitalism does. It tries to make you think that you have no power, that you have no voice. Making sonic spaces for me is an essential part of my own liberation. Sonic spaces are inherently political. I see music as a form of spirituality, and I'm coming from, like, you know, I was brought up in quite a strict Christian household, along with my mum was Christian and my dad was Rasta, so I had like two extremes in a way. And for both sides, music was always very important. Music was a really important part of spirituality. And I think that we can find the spiritual in non-spiritual or secular things. Because of the Enlightenment and the death of God, people think that now there's no God. What do we feel? What do we fill that hole with? Where are we going to get our spirituality from? And I say, you know, we got it from organized religion before. That's how we thought we could access spirituality. Now we can get it from ourselves and from the music that we make and the things that we create. One way that I do that is through hip hop and dub. And I think hip hop is an intrinsically spiritual music. And the way that you make beats is quite ritualistic and is quite spiritual. You know, banging on that drum machine is a form of, it's ritual. It is ritual. Rasta spirituality is, you know, obviously relatively new, just in the last, you know, 70, 80 years. A big part of the spirituality is this kind of philosophy called word, sound and power. What they do is they flip language around because they say that we speak English, and English, the language itself, is a tool of white capitalism, white supremacy, white colonialism, and that we were given this language, English. And so we don't really know how it works. And actually, it's quite interesting. Earlier, we were talking about, you know, internet magic and spell. And so there's this whole idea that spelling literally means that when you talk English in particular, you are putting a spell over people, and you are actually finding ways, or you have kind of hidden ways to oppress them through the language. So that's why they say that we need to subvert the English language in order to get free, so that actually the way of black people becoming liberated is to subvert the English language itself, because that's a tool of white supremacy. And, you know, we were taken away from our mother tongue and given this language that we don't really understand, and it has all these weird spells in. They saw language as a technology of white supremacy and capitalism, so they had to subvert it.
My name is Emma Smith and I'm an artist. I've been working on a project for several years around vocalisation of the collective voice and how we sing together. And so we were just creating an improvised sound piece which was using a set of sounds called the 5 Hertz language, which is a series of sounds which evolved out of an experimentation process over a year, looking at the sounds we feel connected to when we hear them and the sounds that evoke empathy and sort of communal response. And so we were using those sounds to then think, how do we sing together? And so the piece was very much, or as much about listening as it is to do with singing. And so thinking how, when you hear somebody else's voice, how do you shape your own voice in relation to that? Do you play with it? Do you want to harmonise with it? Do you interlock rhythm with it? Or do you kind of want to disrupt it? Basically having a conversation through song. So we've just been in Amphis, which is an architectural space that was actually comes from a similar kind of collective idea of activity or of building. So the building has been constructed from stuff that's been found in the gardens of local residents near to here. And so it's a really kind of eclectic, the most kind of gorgeous, grand, tumbly shed that you could imagine. Made out of, we have doors, bits of old stained glass and all sorts of timber. But in a way, it's actually the buildings come together in the same way as the sound have of thinking about these kind of different sounds or materials that come from different spaces, and then how do they start to have a relationship that works but that also can hold and do their own thing. So yeah, it's been a really intimate space, I guess, to be in, and that's what's nice as well, that we could kind of all be in the round and have people sitting within us as vocalists in the space, and kind of create that kind of sound bath or space, sonic space for people to be in.
The fact that we are here and that I speak these words is an attempt to break silence and bridge some of those differences between us.
For it is not difference which immobilizes us, but silence.
And there are so many silences to be broken.
Hi, I'm Roy Clare Potter.
I'm Zior.
Well, we brought like two things that we'd already got prepared. I just came down yesterday.
Yeah, just brought a bunch of drums.
Yeah, and I we just sat around in a circle.
Yeah, dancing, speaking in tongues.
I brought a text down that was made for something else another time, and we just worked it through, read through it a few times, did a couple of run-throughs.
I mean, it's also not just us, it's also, like, the audience who's participating, but, like, without a response that we get from, like, a listener or something, then, yeah, that needs to be taken into account. I think it worked quite well. Like, I think people were there, they stuck around.
Yeah.
It was a polite English applause in the end.
The text was written in response to a performance by a performance artist called Victoria Gray, and the work was called Ballast, and she made it in 2015. And it was written to describe the moment of watching a performance, and I was thinking about how that in a way is a bit of a violent moment to watch a singular body do really awkward movements, and I just expanded images out from that watching.
I am walking forward. Aiming to walk forward, but I'm rocked. Swaying from my forward directive, the difficulty they impress on my straight walking across this bed staggers me. You see, smaller rocks, they're difficult to manage. It's not that they're great obstacles as such, but it's that they appear small enough to be walked over. On the terms of watching a body articulate its parts, a small step on a rock is indistinguishable from a step that walks over no rock at all. In both instances, the foot's moved by a dumb assurance that engages the wide pad of a full foot, an open full foot, an open soul laid down, assured of the good grace of moving forward. But they tend to be sharper, smaller rocks, being the detritus of some larger obstacle already broken down, some bigger thing managed by bearing its weight, and either intentionally or accidentally bringing it down to the bed. This bed on contact broken into pieces. And that is not erosion. That is not wearing down. This is not the sea or stream. The water here does not turn, flow, change. You're not never in the same river twice. The water here covering this bed is unmoved. You might see ripples on the surface in the wind, but I promise you, this water is still. It's a mass. A body.
The way that you're working so playful and so dynamic and sort of free moving, and that for me seems to match the way that I use cadence in my accent. So yeah, the text is always the text, but the way that I deliver it mm-hmm. changes depending on what I'm in relation to.
Yeah.
So I think it was perfect together for that, you know.
Yeah, it really felt like sometimes you were just like in it, and like all of a sudden just like there was maybe a beat playing like once or something, and then you were just like in a rhythmical mode, and like it really just like went to places, and like we were dragging each other along, just like kind of just like pushing and pulling, get into each other's like felt reality or something.
It was perfect for the images and the text. I felt like it helped me really get inside the space that I was describing and not feel so much on stage. I think, like, in terms of breaking silences, so, like, I'm really coming from a writer's perspective on this, but this, like, standardisation of English language is a thing that I think about quite a lot in terms of what can be read on the page and maybe how to make that more dynamic by writing in dialect or thinking about cadence and speech. And, like, for me, like, trying to feel, like, some sort of energy from pushing my accent forward and for pushing regionality forward.
You can just, like, push change as an individual, like, on a very just, like, micro level, but, like, without that little bit, the big thing won't change either.
The audience is super crucial in that because it's a kind of pressure that's, like, put then on the performer, and that's what I'm trying to get at in the content of the text, is that, like, the audience is producing this kind of, like, intense watching that singles out the performer, and, like, that in itself is, like, a proper slowed down moment, you know. It's kind of almost violence in some ways, you know. Yeah, there was a moment there where I felt like I was preaching, if I'm honest.
Yes. Go for it.
You know, like, and that changed, because that's not a preachy text. Like, it's a descriptive text, but there was just something happening, and, like, maybe two-thirds of the way through, and we were just, like, buzzing quite a lot off one another, that, like, I'd snapped into something, and, like, suddenly the audience changes its character, and it's, like, and then I changed my character. You know, like, the roles just seem to change while, yeah, when the movements and the images are changing as the piece goes on. So, like, it's funny how you end up putting on different hats, different roles in these, like, public assemblies, you know?
I love silence because when there's silence, you just hear your inner body. This is what I like. So what is really interesting is, like, if you hug somebody in silence, this is amazing. And when I do workshop, I love working with this. Try to reconnect with the silence. I'm Enes Dos, the people also know me as Kerry Koudes. I'm a musician, dancer, I do some research about movement also, based in Paris. For me, the body is like kind of like an operating system, okay? Like we, from our childhood, we have like some, I would say, experiences, and the body still have these experiences, even it was like a long time ago. So yeah, we have like encrypted so many information. So yeah, I would say the body is like a software itself. And I'm really interested about like hacking my home software and find something, and also hack the software of the other people through this experience I do. With my friend, we have this project called Atos, Body Mind Operating System, and through like mixing like dance, Russian martial art, buto dance, finding like a kind of like a some exercise and stuff like this to hack on body. But I mean, if somebody is like hitting, I would say beef or something like this, he can hack his own body to be vegetarian, for example. It can be something like this. But for me, it's more like working with pain, trying to push further my body or my mind. But also working with the surrounding also. Like, you know, like maybe have a nice dance with like a whole lady, you know, like something you're not used to. And then you can find like, there's something on it. You know, like this is a kind of a hack for me. Yeah. Yeah, be surprised and get the inspiration. So yeah, download a new inspiration. To be curious is like a nice way to hack his own, to hack himself. dancer working on the electronic music and how I use all this material like live coding to make music with motion sensor or modular synthesizer sample, and how I can create like a soundscape for my dance performance, and how I can involve people also into this, I would say, experience. The connection is like the relationship with human and machine, actually, because we have like a lot of nice instrument built up by like a nice engineer, but I was always felt like there's something disconnect to the body, and I wanted to try to find a way to still be free to dance, but also generate music and compose electronic music. Yeah, when you think with your body, you generate another type of thing. Again, silence means nothing. Like it's just like don't hear like your comfort zone, and you hear what's going on inside you.
Some